ideas and new technology are causing seismic shifts in the media industry. Where are we headed? What does it mean? Keep listening. Media strategist Gabriella Mirabelli talks with the brightest minds in entertainment and business. Meet the innovators, the risk takers, and the disruptors on the front lines of change from Hollywood, Wall Street, Silicon Valley, and beyond. The future is coming to a screen near you. Are you ready? This is the Up Next podcast with Gabriella Mirabelli.
Welcome to Up Next. I'm your host, Gabriella Mirabelli. Today, I'm interviewing the Chief Executive Officer of the Boston Globe Media Partners. Prior to joining the Globe in January 2014, he spent 20 years at Hill Holliday, where he won numerous awards and would go on to serve as Chairman, Chief Executive Officer, President, and Chief Creative Officer. During his tenure as President and CEO, the agency grew 85%, becoming one of the largest agencies in America and the second largest based outside of New York. Mike Sheehan, thanks so much for joining us today. So first off, you, while you were at Hill Holliday, grew the firm, you know, tremendously, and it was one of the largest agencies in America, second largest outside of New York. Why then move to the Globe?
Well, I was done with Hill Holliday. I'd been there 20 years, and I left in 2013 after 10 years as CEO, and I wanted a new chapter in my life. I wasn't quite sure what it was, and so I... after leaving, I was still chairman at the time, and was asked if I wanted to come over and help the Globe make the transition from New York Times to new ownership. And two years, 9 months of doing that.
That actually segues really nicely. And how does the spinoff from the New York Times help to hurt?
Well, I think it's kind of a natural evolution. I don't think it was the Globe. I think had been put up for sale two or three times by the New York Times. Over the years, in 2009, they were going to shut it down. They had threatened to shut it down. And that was that came with some major concessions on costs at the Globe, and which they did in transition. So it was expected. I think it was going to happen over a long period of time. But it's mostly process, you know, things that we did here because we were part of the New York Times. We had to take on ourselves and, you know, at that point, we were part of a publicly traded company, so the accounting department was different.
Right.
Certainly for compliance reasons, being part of a publicly traded company, it made a little different. So it was more, but nothing, I don't think it made a whole lot of difference, you know, because I think people were prepared for it.
Right.
They were ready to go on their own. It wasn't that big a deal.
Right. Do you think that your background in advertising has had an impact on advertiser perceptions of the Globe?
I'm not sure if, you know, it was very helpful for me coming from an agency background because, you know, certainly very much aware of the changes that were taking place and the pressure on newspapers because I was, you know, kind of part of the ecosystem
that
dealt with clients every day and, you know, advised them to shift to digital and advised them that, you know, newspapers were, you know, not what they used to be. It was certainly walking in here on day one, there were no surprises for me. I mean, I knew what clients were being told by agencies about news because I had told them that.
So now you found yourself talking either
there
way.
There was no surprise. There was no surprise about it, you know? So it was just kind of a natural progression.
Would you say that the digital print revenue mix today versus when you joined the paper, how has it shifted?
It is, well, it depends what you, if you're talking about ad revenue, it's slowly migrating to digital, you know, more than print. We know the model in the future is based on advertiser plus subscriber revenue.
Right.
It's two-part. I mean, I don't think it's a very good long-term strategy for a digital property to be advertising only. I think that's unsustainable. It's got to be a combination of both. It has to be advertiser-supported plus subscriber-supported.
Just jumping in, would you say that that's for any publisher, like a video publisher, any sort of content publisher?
I think the economics of digital advertising are such that unless your costs are bare bottom, that you have just baseline costs, it's probably a combination of both. It's very tough to support on advertising only and for a publisher. But I think you know, when the decision was made here to separate Boston.com and create Globe.com back in 2011. Mm-hmm. Globe.com being subscription-based service of in the real journalism site. Mm-hmm. That was a very smart move, and we were well ahead of other newspapers in the country. Right. And now we have over 70,000 paid digital subscribers, and it's a dollar a day. It's not inexpensive.
Right.
And so, but it shouldn't be, because it's supporting journalism, and journalism isn't cheap.
Well, exactly. You know, one thing I'm curious about, just jumping, is about ad blocking and
yes.
Ad block screens.
Yep.
Because Boston.com, I did a little test yesterday.
Yep.
And so you have an ad block wall on Boston.com, but not the Globe. Do you have ad block walls on the subscription?
Globe.com is subscription based.
Right.
Boston.com is free.
Okay.
It's an issue, but it isn't as big an issue as it's, you know, yet. It's about 15% visitors that use ad blocking now. The BostonGlobe.com site, the journalism site, the paid site,
right.
It does not have many advertising units. It's certainly not compared to Boston.com.
Right.
It's kind of respectful that people are paying a dollar a day, and it's not very intrusive with advertising.
Right. Right. What's interesting in terms of the ad blocking is we had run a survey of young millennials just last week. We put it out, and 2/3 of young millennials have ad blockers, and
yep.
they are using them.
Yep.
And the driver for them is not the print stuff. It's really the intrusive video
right.
roll and things like that. Once they're installed on their mobile devices and their desktop devices,
right.
they just are there. So it I think is going to become increasingly a challenge. As other people are taught by these
sure.
users about
right.
technology, or they just,
right.
the cohort ages up.
Yep.
So now looping back again, newspapers are often sort of the community connection. And what do you think that newspapers have that allows them to exploit this in ways that other news media don't do as well? Like, what is the advantage to a newspaper?
Trust. Plain and simple. That there is, you know, a 150-year approximately heritage at the Globe of producing journalism that people can trust. That it is, and that's why it's not inexpensive to produce. It's,
right.
I mean, to make it into the Globe newsroom, you've demonstrated that you are a very good reporter, and you have cultivated sources. That's not inexpensive to do. Those sources can be trusted,
mm-hmm.
and you are a very good writer. And then it's fact-checked and it's copy-edited. And I think when you do that time and time again, I think we produce somewhere in the neighborhood of 400 pages of content a week. So when you do that over and over and over again, you develop a relationship with the reader that's based on trust. That if it's in the Globe, or if it's in a, you know, trusted newspaper publication, there's no substitute for that. That is the value proposition.
And does that same value proposition, is that working well with the millennials and the Gen Zers, which everybody's chasing?
Yeah, I think it's that takes time. You know, I have a theory that
theory.
Could be right. It could be wrong. There is the people kind of go through a progression in life,
mm-hmm.
and how deeply engaged they are with the communities, right? And I think. You know, you might high school, college, sports is different because I think that, you know, we have an incredibly robust sports offering here.
Right.
And we're fortunate to be in Boston with four teams that on a given day are considered national teams.
Right.
That's different. But as you get out of college and then you're interested in what's going on, you know, what to do this weekend, where to go, where to eat, what to drive, where to live, neighborhoods. That's kind of where you begin.
Mm-hmm.
But then as you enter your late 20s, early 30s, perhaps you get married, have a family, and then people tend to move out of the city into the suburbs, and they become part of their community, and the community matters to them.
Right.
And they start to become engaged. And that's when a newspaper becomes far more valuable to people. And I think it's one of the things that we've wrestled with here with Boston.com and in the Globe, is that the differentiation demographically is not that great.
Right.
In fact, there are times when Boston.com audience is actually older than the Globe.com audience.
Really? That's interesting.
The opportunity long term is to take Boston.com and make it 18 to 30, 35,
right.
and make the Globe for people who become engaged in the community, want to know what the mayor is doing, want to know everything about a presidential election, you know, want to know what's happening with the city council, what's happening in their town. And that's when people become a little more engaged with the Globe. And that's also for a print advertiser, the household income of a Globe subscriber is $110,000, $120,000 a year.
Right.
That's an incredibly valuable audience.
Sure.
And it's also on a given day, circulation of 160, on weekends, you know, 350. You can take the entire audience that's watching local news. It doesn't come close to that in a given day.
Right. Well,
so
it's
interesting. It's an incredibly high, you know, it's a high income audience too. So it's very valuable to advertisers.
Right. Well, it's interesting because people are often chasing the millennial audience, and yet these are the people who are creating our gig economy because they don't have jobs and don't have any money.
So. Right, and they live in the parents' basement. I mean, that's a broad, broad sweeping generalization. And I will confess that I lived with my parents until I was 28. But you know that.
I'm not telling. Oh, that's funny. There's a certain amount of noise around how newspapers are getting into production, branded content, yep. VR segments, things like that.
Yep.
How viable and realistic are these things?
It's very good for us. We entered that about a year and a half ago. It's growing, and it's both on the media side and on the production side. Because you find advertisers that want help telling the story.
Uh-huh.
And, traditional digital advertising is limited in how, you know, you have to click and go into their site.
Right.
But it is a very viable way for a brand to tell a long story. And that's the advantage when you take, you know, millennials and Gen Z is, right?
Mm-hmm.
There is a acceptance for sponsored content.
Right.
That isn't with my generation. My generation views it as an advertorial and don't read it.
Right.
There's far more acceptance of sponsored content of being worthy of engagement for, and that's great.
How does that work with the trust issue, though? I mean,
clearly marked.
Very obvious. You don't run into those BuzzFeed kind of issues.
No. We clearly market as sponsored content, but we produce it here at the Globe.
Okay.
And that's a good revenue source as well, producing sponsored content.
Right.
And, you know, it's not hard for the Globe to find people either on staff or a freelance basis. We tend to use freelance. Uh-huh. Also, that's where my background helps as well. Because
there you go.
It's not hard to find people who can do it. The issue is finding people who can do it with what I call a journalism metabolism done very well quickly.
Right. Well, that is the challenge, isn't it?
But there are a number of, you know, former journalists out there that we work with.
How about very specifically VR? What do you think about that? Are people interested in that? Are brands interested, or no, not so much?
You know, I think that's out there a little bit. Okay. Definitely in the future, but let's nail sponsored content first. You can only do so many things at one time.
Right. So what about the film Spotlight? How did that change or impact the Globe's reputation?
I think it definitely enhanced the Globe's reputation. There's no question about that. I hope it enhanced every newspaper's reputation. I think it enhanced the role of journalism, just like all the President's Men did in the 70s. I think it was very, very helpful to remind people. And it demonstrates also that it's not an inexpensive proposition to have a team out there doing investigative journalism. And sometimes they don't publish. You won't see someone on the Spotlight team's byline for 6 months or a year. That's not inexpensive to staff something. And we have increased the size of the Spotlight team in the past couple of years.
That was sort of my follow-on. Are you still doing that kind of work?
We're still doing it, and it's bigger than ever. The Spotlight team is the longest continuous operating investigative team in U.S. journalism.
Wow.
And we've increased the size of it.
How, from a business perspective, how do you balance? When do you know if things are going to pan out?
That's a newsroom. I'm on the business side.
Okay.
There is a strict church and state.
Okay.
The business side being church, the journalist being state. But that would be up to the Brian McGrory, the editor, to make that call.
And do you, though, as the business star, do you set parameters?
Nope.
No.
Nope. Not at all.
Interesting. The Newspaper Association of America just dropped the word newspaper from the membership group. Do you think that was the right thing to do?
I think people, by and large, understand that the term newspaper doesn't necessarily refer just to paper anymore.
Right.
And I think there's a lot of good that comes with the term newspaper because it's synonymous with journalism.
Well, that's actually speaking to that whole idea. I was wondering, you know, positives, negatives, and is that somewhat parallel with what you did with Boston.com?
That was 1995, Boston.com.
Okay.
And it was a brilliant thing to do at the time. It was, but in hindsight, giving away journalism for free was the single dumbest thing an industry has ever an industry has ever done. I mean, it was absolutely devastating to the industry.
It's the ether. I mean, I think actually in many ways, this is, so now we get to the heart of why I'm having the podcast. We have this ethos, this internet, and it's free. Yep. It's everything. Yep. It's you don't pay for what you get, and you get really lots of goodies. Then trying to say, but it's expensive. And if you like your goodies, they cost money to make. So you got to pony up some money, but people don't like it. You know, 69% of millennials are also pirating content. They're ad blocking and they're pirating. So then what's an established business to do? So, okay, you have Boston.com, you're giving away your stuff. How do you then get a dollar a day subscription? How did you get people to do that?
We moved all the we took the Globe journalism off the site,
okay.
So you couldn't access it for free. And then we charged for it, and there's value to it to a number of people. We have the exact same number of paid subscribers to the Globe today that we had 5 years ago. Just 70,000 have migrated from print to digital.
Really?
Yes. So people are willing to pay. They understand and they're willing to pay for it. And that is, it's the challenge. And I think, you know, that's why when you mentioned the movie Spotlight, it reminds people why it's important.
Right.
Because if this newsroom, the New York Times newsroom, Washington Post newsroom, Philly, Dallas, if those newsrooms aren't out in the community as a check to authority, all hell is going to break loose in America. Just because of the demise of newspapers nationwide, there are many city halls. There, you know, boards of selectmen meetings, city council meetings where there's no reporter presence. And that is not healthy for democracy.
Right.
If there's no one from the media as a watchdog, it just is not healthy whatsoever.
Right.
So, I think people realize that and they're willing to pay for it.
So John Oliver did a segment on newspapers. Did you see that segment?
I certainly did. Yeah.
How was that received?
That was terrific. It was, you know, it's always been a frustration of mine and, you know, the Globe. Sets the agenda for news in New England.
Right.
And, you know, you wake up and you see the morning news on television and it just quotes the Boston Globe on every channel. And our newsroom is fueling that. And that's frustrating because, you know, we have a 250-person newsroom and nobody else does. And that's not inexpensive to run, to operate. It's not.
Right. And so they're basically getting all of their content, which they're selling ad time on,
right,
to you. But you're getting free advertising as long as they quote you.
Yeah. I'll take the revenue. Thank you. I don't think it's a fair trade, but
Well, think of what you sold those ads at that ad time for.
Yep.
Think of the value. Think of the value. Another question. This is sort of off point. What's it like to work with John Henry?
Oh, it's terrific. I mean, John's a very good guy. He's he loves journalism. He loves the community, and it's enjoyable.
I was actually thinking Red Sox as well.
No, it's odd. We never discuss. There's never.
No, really?
Never.
Not at all?
Keeps things totally separate. Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
No, all right.
But it's great to watch them. Good. They're doing great. It's a very good year.
It's a good year. Okay. So some stuff I go through with people. I sort of go through a list of words, get reactions. You ready?
Yep.
Okay. Facebook.
It's like oxygen.
Google.
Oxygen on steroids. I mean, these are just...
It's just a reaction. It's just your reaction.
Yep, okay, yep.
Snapchat.
Fine.
I don't get it, so I'm always curious what other people...
Not for me. Yep.
Twitter.
Limited.
YouTube.
Awesome.
Ad blockers.
Reality.
Art.
Art. That's funny. It's like everything.
That's good.
It's everything.
VR.
The future.
AI.
The future.
I'm actually curious. Speaking of AI,
yep.
There is AI out there writing sports articles.
Yep.
Do you guys use AI at all at the Globe?
No. I think it's... again, I'll go back to art. It's everything.
Uh-huh.
And if you read a Dan Shaughnessy column, it's art. That's right. You know, the best are art.
Right.
The best columns, you know, it just is. And right. There's no, you're just not going to get all the computing power in the world. It's not going to produce a Dan Shaughnessy column. It's not going to have his sources, his insights, his nuance, his knowledge of you know, of the games, the teams, the players, which is, there's no substitute for that.
Right, right. So, what are you watching?
What do I watch?
What are you watching? What do you read?
I watch CNBC all the time because I love business. I read. I'm a news junkie. I mean, I'm just. I love
news. So it's news, yep. news
yep.
all the time.
Yep. And I also serve on the board of the American Repertory Theater, so I spend a lot of time in Cambridge over at Harvard with the theater,
which is good.
You say art is everything. You know, spend some time over there because it's terrific.
Fantastic. So what's up next? What do you see happening at the Globe or for you? And what excites you? What's on the?
You know, I think this is a pivotal year for the Globe, 2016. Because when we separated from the New York Times and John took over, we made some fundamental decisions that are really, talk about internally disruptive decisions.
Okay.
One of them was to sell the building we're in on Morrissey Boulevard, which is, and to get our costs in line. This is currently, it's an 800 and something square foot facility.
Okay.
It was built in the late 50s. It's insanely inefficient.
Right.
Our printing here is insanely inefficient.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're investing in a new printing facility in Taunton.
Okay.
So it's 35 miles south of the city. It will be the most state-of-the-art newspaper printing facility in the country by 15 years.
Wow.
But it's challenging because it's not like anyone manufactures presses anymore for newspapers, right?
Right.
So you have to go around the world to find the presses, and they're being installed right now. One press line's up; it's going very well. And if you look, it's an important part of our business because commercial printing is a third of our business, which is printing other people's newspapers.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we print the New York Times, and distribute the New York Times, the Boston Herald, USA Today, and maybe 20 or 25 other newspapers
that we
produce. And so ideally when Taunton is up and operational and it's coming online now, press line by press line,
right.
That's an opportunity to that commercial printing, that operation can subsidize journalism.
Wow.
Because as it'll be much faster. It'll save us $22 million a year in costs.
Wow.
So that's one thing we're doing.
Right.
We're moving everyone else who isn't on the production side, is in the supply chain, to new offices in downtown Boston. And so it'll be the first time since 1958 that the Globe has actually been located. We're going to be one block away from where we were on Newspaper Row, where we moved to in 1958. So the newsroom's going to be across pretty much diagonally kitty corner from City Hall.
And that was a cost savings to move into Boston, that location?
Oh, yeah. This building is a pig for expenses. It just sucks up. It is, and but it could be because there were times when those presses printed money,
right?
I mean, people have to understand what classified advertising. We had $180 million a year in classified advertising.
Gosh.
In 2005, that went from 180 to 70 million in 18 months.
Oh my gosh.
So those are the kind of pressures that. This building could hide a multitude of sins because it could afford to, and now it can't anymore.
Right.
And so we're going through all these transitions at one time.
Right.
And it's disruptive, and it's what we have to do to create in the future a platform and a foundation that you can actually start to grow again.
Right. Right. Well, this is the transition point right here. And so these things, you'll move everything.
We have a P&S on the building here. We have another building out in Millbury that we'll sell.
Wow.
And it'll be far more efficient.
That's fantastic. And is the
we're going overall from 850,000 square feet to about 375.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And are you then also, because you are in this industry, which is going to be constantly having to react to change.
Yep.
How are you structuring it so it's more flexible so that you don't have to have such a big big point of change that you can sort of constantly tweak as the internet or whatever new technology comes
right,
along.
Right, right.
How do you accommodate that?
I think we understand that we'll be printing newspapers for a long time.
Right.
Right. We're going to be printing, there'll be a decline. There's no question about it, but we're going to be printing for a long time. So if we're going to do it, we might as well do it as efficiently as possible.
Right.
And by building the most state-of-the-art facility in the region, we know we're going to pick up more commercial printing revenue.
Right.
Because that will allow other publishers to get rid of their printing facilities that are equally inefficient to what we currently have now.
Right.
We know that. And then when you take the business side in the newsroom and move it downtown, it'll be a different, totally different organization. And that will allow flexibility to do whatever we want to do in the future.
Right. Is there anything that worries you? Like things that, nothing.
I mean, how about assembling a press line that's coming in from Turkey? I mean, just to start with that. I mean, this is the industry is an extremely challenged industry, and it is just so that you worry about everything. There's nothing you don't worry about.
So, but what would you say is the thing that you say this is the one thing that's the most pressing?
The most pressing is the most important thing is getting the new printing facility up and operational. It's on schedule now,
mm-hmm.
and operating at 100% efficiency as quickly as possible.
Right.
Because that will help us drive down costs. Nothing else will help us drive down costs like that will. And then and then while you're doing that with one hand, on the other hand, you're driving, because we have very limited marketing budgets. We don't really have a large marketing budget at all.
Free morning show advertising.
Yeah, but we got to translate that into digital subscriptions. Digital, right. We know in the future advertising will be an important part of it, but subscriber revenues is going to be more important.
How are you? In addition, I mean, like, what ways are you? Do you have ad campaigns to drive subscription? Or
we have one spot that runs on Nessun as a co-op deal. But then we do, a kind of direct digital advertising to drive subscriptions. I mean, the good thing about, you talk about social media like, Facebook and Twitter, that's where people share our content. So people come to us a lot,
uh-huh.
right? And they come enough and they go through their 5 free monthly samples.
And then they want more.
And then they want it. They want more. And then they subscribe.
Right.
Sampling's a really important part of what we do. We have to make sure people sample the product because once they do, they'll start to eat up their 5 free ones and they subscribe.
Right. Right. I do that. So
yep.
It works.
I don't mind. I had them check when I was on the agency side, I would meet with the publisher regularly and I was always, I can't believe you're giving away your product. You can't give away journalists because we didn't give away our work on the agency side, right? We charged for everything. We charged for copies. We charged for phone calls.
Right.
I mean, you're giving away a product. And what does that say to your columnists and to your writers that you're giving it away for free? So in 2011, when the Globe site came in, I think I'm subscribing number 150 out of 70,000 because I subscribe to the New York Times. I subscribe to the Globe. I subscribe to Wall Street Journal. And I do it happily
right. Because
I know what happens in the country if newspapers and journalists aren't allowed to do their jobs. And it's devastating.
Right. Right. Well, it's a real sort of, it becomes a civic good.
Yep. I compare it to, a cup of coffee that people pay $2 for a cup of coffee in the morning.
Right. They'll pay more than $2. It's like $4.50.
$4.50. I'm thinking Duncan. But $2.30. But they, so you can tell me the Globe's not worth a dollar? And, newspapers have done a miserable, miserable job because they gave it away for so long.
Right.
Do you want to say there's no value to a product? Give it away for a decade.
Right.
Right. And it's going to take a long time to cover from that incredibly boneheaded mistake.
Yes, true. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Well, we've reached the end of another episode of Up Next. I'd like to close by thanking a few important people who've been indispensable to bringing this program to life. First and foremost is the incomparable voice artist and my friend, Rob Naughton. Thank you. Our production team over at Microfame Media. Thank you. A big thank you to our guest and new friend, Mike Sheehan. And of course, most importantly, all of you, the members of our amazing audience. Thank you. I'll be talking to you again next week, right here on Up Next.